You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by Hugging It Out. Instead, it's brought to you by Hugging It In. No, Hugging It Out with something furry or fuzzy or cute or, you know, feathered or scaled or gross. That's right. Brought to you by your local animal shelter. Do you want to get a furry, feathered, or scaly friend? Then go to your local shelter before the pet store. There's so many four-legged or two-legged friends out there. Well, actually, some three-legged too. Just waiting to find a good home. Do you already have your furry forever friend, but you want to help out anyway? You can donate your time or your money to your local animal shelter instead. So get out and get huggin'.
Well, hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I am your host, Joe, joined as always by
Devin
and
Steve,
who's not paying attention.
I'm reading about the Predators.
Steve is out on the internet right now, reading up about Jesse Ventura. We'll talk about Jesse in a minute.
He's my new hero.
Yeah, I know. He's an action hero.
I love
hero.
This guy.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome. So anyway, we're going to talk about another cool mystery. We're going to talk about the strange goings-on at a super-secret government facility. It's on an island off the east coast of the United States. But you didn't know there was something like that, did you? Well, there is. Have you heard of the Montauk Monster?
No.
You haven't?
Well, some people have. Of course
I have.
Yeah. Okay. We're doing an episode on it.
He's the best actor ever.
Yeah.
The look on his face is like, what, you haven't?
Yeah. What? And also, have you heard of Lyme disease?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And also, there are some other Montauk monsters out there, the similar kinds of things that have washed up nearby, and I've seen the pictures of them. And Lyme disease was first identified in 1975 in Old Lyme, Connecticut. Well, the town of Old Lyme is 11 miles northwest of a place called Plum Island, which is a tiny island in the mouth of the Long Island Sound, which puts it basically between Long Island, New York, and the coast of Connecticut. And it's about 18 miles northwest of Montauk Point, the tip of Long Island, which is where the Montauk Monster was found on
what?
The beach. Yeah. And you guys have seen pictures of the Montauk Monster, right? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's pretty weird looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will agree. It is not in a good state.
Yeah, no. So people have drawn a connection. I mean, it's that close to Montauk Point, and there's this weird island over there where the government's doing all kinds of stuff that they won't talk about. And it doesn't help that Plum Island is surrounded by guys in boats with guns. Like, you know, we're talking Homeland Security guys. They won't let you near the island. You are not allowed to land on the island. And actually, the island was indeed a biological warfare research center for a little bit. And that's really true. That's not, I'm not just making that up. But that, and officially at least, that mission was ended in 1969. Unofficially, well, who knows what's going on there? Some people suspect that maybe it still continues or something even more nefarious. Some people suspect that, of course, Lyme disease might have originated there and maybe some other things too, like the West Nile virus might have originated on that island. It also doesn't help that a few other strange things have been found nearby, like a human body that was found on the beach or a body that seemed to be mostly human but was kind of different. That was 2010 when it was found. And somebody recently dredged up some photos of another creature that was found in 1959 on the beach on the island. You seen those photos, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, it doesn't look like a human being.
Nope.
I think you have to agree. Maybe a human dog hybrid. So all this prompts a lot of questions. What the hell is going on Plum Island? Well, okay. First, I'm going to give you a little background about the island.
Sweet.
Yeah, I know. It's totally sweet. So you all know where Long Island, New York is. If you don't, well, get into Google or something and go take a look at it.
And this is Plum Island, P-L-U-M.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Plumb Island,
yeah,
as
like
in from Plumb Bob.
Yeah, no. That's just plum like the fruit. Yeah, so Long Island is a long, skinny thing that's parallel to the coast of Connecticut. And Long Island Sound is in between Connecticut and the island. And then in the mouth of it on the east end, you can find it on Google. Just type in Plum Island in maps, and it'll take you right there. And it'll show you aerials and everything, although I'm sure they've been dummied up by the government. But you can see there's a bunch of buildings. There's some roads and stuff like that on the island. It's 840 acres, which it's about, what, like 1.3 square miles, something like that.
Somewhere in the neighborhood.
Yeah. It's been owned by the feds since 1898, when it was bought for construction of Fort Terry, which at the time was thought necessary to protect Long Island Sound from enemy ships. We were at war with Spain at the time. You all remember the Spanish-American War?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, like it was yesterday, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so after I think World War II, Fort Terry was finally shuttered, and then the Army Chemical Corps took over the island, and I guess they were going to pursue research into biological warfare, but then they turned around and decided to give the island to the USDA, that's the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Well, they had plans, and they started to build, but it almost looks like it was really underfunded, because they began construction, but then when the USDA took over, they had to take over these buildings and use them as is, and I think expand on them or complete some, because it wasn't as if the facility was all there and ready from when the World War II group was in there.
No, I mean, but Fort Terry was, I mean, there were some fortifications, and probably all the rest of it was just wooden buildings for things like barracks, you know, mess halls and storage rooms and stuff like that, you know? So not exactly research laboratory stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah, not really. But they've since done some building on there, and they got some shiny new buildings. And the USDA established the Plum Island Animal Disease Center, mostly to research foot and mouth disease. You might also have heard of that as hoof and mouth disease.
Yep.
Which is a nasty little thing that hits your cows and pigs and stuff like that. And it can be hard on agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if your animals get it, you have to kill them and like burn their carcasses.
Yeah, they're not the meat is non-saleable.
Yeah,
at
exactly.
that point,
yeah,
it doesn't kill the animal, but it's non-saleable.
Yeah, it makes them kind of useless, and so yeah, and it can be actually devastating. I mean, to the animals, you know, because you get that, and it's like, oh, Herbie, too bad for you. Yeah, but also some other things besides that. I mean, like rinderpest and a few other weird diseases like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a few things they've looked into.
Yeah, but mostly foot and mouth. They're looking for things like early detection tools and vaccines. I don't think they've ever invented a vaccine for foot and mouth disease.
I don't think so either.
I don't believe they have.
But that's certainly not going to stop them from trying. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Probably at this point they're not trying anymore, but...
Uh-huh.
Back then.
Well, yeah, we managed to eradicate it in the U.S. in 1929. But, you know, on the other hand, it might come back, so it pays to be prepared. But, yeah, mainly it is foot and mouth that they do stuff there. And, of course, it's on the island because it's against federal law to study foot and mouth disease on the U.S. mainland.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, like I said, we eradicated it. We don't want it back. So it's not legal.
And it's rather hard for a cow that, or pig that's infected to just wander away because it's stuck on an island.
That's exactly.
The deterrent.
Yeah, although there has been some talk about closing the island down and moving the whole research center to the middle of Kansas somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And
same thing, yeah. Really. Island, middle of Kansas.
Yeah, where are they going to go from Kansas?
Nowhere.
What I really love about this is that, did you look at the site where they were going to put it in Kansas?
No.
It's right on, if what I looked at is where they're really looking to do it, it's damn near on the banks of a river that pours straight into a major metropolitan area.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, great. So you're researching diseases. And when you have something go wrong and it overflows, it's going to go right into the river.
But Steve, things never overflow. Things always go perfectly.
If toilets have taught me anything, that is not true.
It would be toilets too, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Yeah, toilets do that.
They are a great. It's not a metaphor. Allegory? Analogy?
Allegory.
Continue on, Joe.
Okay. Yeah. We'll tackle that later. And okay, back to our island history. Usually, if you read about the history of the island, you also hear a mention of Eric Traub, who was, and you guys have heard of Eric Traub, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, supposedly a Nazi. I guess he was officially a Nazi Party member, a German guy, who's been called the godfather of Plum Island. And during World War II, Eric Traub worked for the German government on what's called Reims Island off the north coast of Germany in the Baltic Sea. And he was doing kind of similar stuff, biological warfare, but it was animal-oriented kind of stuff. He worked on things like foot and mouth disease and rinderpest, just like they do on Plum Island. But, of course, part of the idea was an offensive use for these diseases, so you could weaponize it and infect your enemy's cattle and pigs and stuff with this and, you know, like totally screw up their food supply in time of war, which is actually
super effective.
Super effective. Army marches on his stomach, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we talked about that in, what was the potato beetle?
Yeah, exactly.
The Beatles.
Yeah,
exactly. So this has been practiced time and again. I mean, thousands of years ago, it was like you invaded your enemy's territory, you burned his crops.
Salted the earth.
Absolutely. So yeah, this is old stuff, but, you know, modern biological warfare kind of stuff, but old stuff. But Eric Traub was brought to the U.S. under Operation Paperclip, which you probably heard of, where we got a bunch of German scientists and brought him over here after the war before the Russians could get their hands on him. And he was interviewed extensively about his work on Reims Island. And supposedly this was maybe the inspiration for the creation of the facility at Plum Island, maybe. But contrary to popular legend, Traub never actually worked on Plum Island. I think he was offered a job there one time, which he turned down.
And he was like, no, I'm done.
The commute sucks.
So, yeah, I'm tired of working on islands, dude. Yeah. Or maybe he had a better job offer. I don't know.
And we're working on this bomb thing over here. It sounds much more exciting.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was a foot and mouth bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But as I said, though, they did actually work for a little while on biological warfare, but it was kind of like what Eric Traub did on Reims Island. It was not human diseases, just ways to make your enemy's cows and pigs sick. And officially, at least, that mission was ended in 1969 by the Nixon administration.
Sure.
Because they were negotiating the Biological Weapons Convention at that time, and which became supposedly international law in 1972, the Biological Weapons Convention, which banned offensive research into weaponized stuff. It's kind of an elastic standard. I think you could still research diseases. You just can't, it's sort of, I mean, nobody knows when you're crossing the line into taking that research into that disease to actually unleashing it on your enemies, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously if you got a little warhead that's designed to spread foot and mouth disease, well, yeah, you stepped over the line, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're manufacturing it in vast quantities, well, that's kind of stepping over the line, too. You got to, you know. So that's the biological way.
Seems like a pretty obvious line, then.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, no, it's fuzzy in a way. You know, it's just a question of quantity. I mean, how much is too much in terms of quantity? You know, when have you crossed that line? Well, you know, that's where it gets a little bit fuzzy.
Hard to tell. Yeah.
Yeah. But, of course, since then, the research on Plum Island has strictly, officially at least, been into animal diseases. Again, foot and mouth. Etc. They've built new buildings, and there are a lot of old derelict buildings also that go back to the original fort. I think there's something like 70 buildings on the island, many of which are kind of fallen down.
And they just left because it's cheaper to just let them rot away, probably, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, when you're on an island like that, bringing in demo crews and all that kind of stuff, maybe that does cost a little extra.
And it could potentially backfire if you have them hauling away debris in an area where you were doing testing.
True.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Or maybe you got some bodies buried out there. I don't know. But
that's where Hoffa's at.
Yeah, it could be. But it that does help to further the kind of sinister image of the island, because old water buildings are kind of scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, all the scary, creepy stuff never happens in spiffy new concrete, you know, industrial buildings or shiny skyscrapers. Have you noticed that?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Satan likes old, crusty, ugly buildings.
Because Satan is old and crusty.
Is that what it is?
He is an old, crusty building, I'm pretty sure, actually.
Yeah. So if you're listening, Hollywood, you know, throw everybody a curveball in your next horror film, put it in a shiny office tower.
I'm so excited to get like a million emails from people that are like,
what about this movie?
Yeah.
What about that movie?
I can't think
We'll learn about it.
Yeah. Yep.
I suppose that was at that Die Hard. That was in a shiny office tower. Okay. But also, you know, when you think about it, old buildings like that are derelict and everything are kind of a perfect cover for secret labs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because who would look under an old rotting warehouse?
I wouldn't.
I would never think to look there. Yeah.
You wouldn't either.
But if you're in the know, you walk on in, you pick your way through the garbage and detritus, and there's a wino passed out in the corner, and you sort of roll him over, and there's a shiny hatch set in the floor made of stainless steel leading to your secret lab. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a perfect cover. And who knows? Maybe that's what's going on there.
It's possible.
Yeah. Jesse Ventura. I really think so. Yeah.
Yay.
Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, I promise we'd talk about Jesse a little bit. Yeah. If you haven't heard of Jesse,
guy.
Yeah, he's the former governor of Minnesota and one of America's leading intellectuals and had a TV show for a little while called Conspiracy Theory. And he did an episode about this particular island. And you guys, I know, watched it. I sent you guys a link.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, as much as you could. Anyway.
As much as I could tolerate, I watched.
Yeah, and we will have a link to that episode on our webpage if you want to watch it.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah,
if you've got 45 minutes in which you'd like to murder your brain.
Come on, guys.
Watch it.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. That's true.
No, not that bad.
It's that bad.
Oh, come on. But, well, of course, Jesse mentions the Montauk Monster and also another beast that washed ashore not too far west of there. They interviewed this local web journalist whose name was Nick Cutnero. And you'll see him if you watch the episode. He saw the original Montauk Monster, which washed ashore, I believe, in 2008.
Yeah.
Right? He obviously lives there. But there was also apparently a second thing that washed ashore, which he saw. And they showed some video of this monster, and it's hard to say exactly what it was. But Cutnero did say that it had paws, or rather claws. He said they were actually like chicken claws, which is not something you'd normally see on fish. Which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But I've seen the video of it. Again, it's just this sort of, you can't really tell what the hell it is.
Is it like shaky, faint camera footage?
Well, it's not.
Or is it more because it's a gelatinous blob that's been in the water for
like
a long
kind
time?
Of like it's kind of like that. But, you know, some sort of hideous genetic creation, you know, obviously created in the lab. But now, seriously, though, it's hard to say. When stuff is in the ocean for a long time, obviously.
It's impossible.
It's a little worse for the wear. But Nick Cutnero also investigated a human body that was found on the shore of Plum Island in January 2010, a mere 7 years ago. Well, almost 8 years, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the body was human, but it had these strangely elongated fingers. And it also had five holes drilled in its skull.
Were they the size of a 9mm bullet?
I don't know what the size of them were, but there were five holes, and which some people have suggested would indicate that scientists were maybe performing brain experiments on this creature.
Hmm.
Yeah. It was also wearing shirt and pants, but it had no wallet, no other way to identify who or what it was. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, the driver's license there, the New York driver's license is, you know, male, female, genetic aberration. There was no identification. Obviously, the body was never identified, if it was ever even a fully fledged human being. But this Nick Cutnero guy did go down to the local sheriff's office to ask questions about the body. And he said that when he got there, they clammed up and wouldn't talk to him about it.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, apparently he said he talked to them on the phone like the day before. He says, yeah, I want to come down and talk about it. And they said, and the guy just said, yeah, sure, come on down. But then he shows up, and it's just like, bam, nothing.
That's probably their game with reporters is let's just make that guy come all the way down here for nothing.
That's right. Because he's going to come all the way down here. He's going to spend half an hour just finding a parking spot.
Right.
And he's going to put a bunch of money in the meter.
Yep.
And then he's going to show up and we're going to go, ha ha.
And then we're going to ticket him for improper parking.
Yeah. Nobody gets back.
It's a money making scheme. Yeah, we will tow this
car. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so, but he thought that was kind of hinky that they wouldn't talk to him about this body. Since Jesse aired his episode, which I think was in 2011, somebody also posted a YouTube video, I referenced it earlier, of a creature that was found on the beach on Plum Island in 1959. And I've seen the video. I assume you guys watched the video too, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All 30 seconds of it.
It's not a very long video. Yeah. And, it looks like maybe some sort of animal-human hybrid. It almost looks to me like the hindquarters, back legs of a dog, maybe. But the front legs are not dog legs. They have elbows, and look almost more human to me.
I know Devin has, but have you, Joe? Did you ever play that old video game Altered Beast?
No.
You've played Altered Beast, Devin.
Nope.
Oh, God, what is wrong with you people?
Anyway, other video games?
Yeah, we suck.
It's an old video game, yeah. But there is one of the very first beasts you become is this dog hybrid thing, and it's got, you know, a true dog head, and the rest of it's just a hairy human body. That's what I thought it looked like.
You thought it was a human body with a dog head kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I thought it was kind of the opposite, like a dog, partial dog body with human arms, maybe. I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah, but anyway.
It looked like a skinny bear to me, so.
Oh, skinny bear? Okay. Well, maybe if you're lucky, we'll put a link to this video, you know, on your website, and you can look for yourself. But unfortunately, nobody's thought like set a beer can down next to this creature for scale. So you can't
when they
really,
were creating this film,
when they were filming it, you know, because so you can't really tell how big it is. I mean, it could be, you know, the size of a 20-pound dog, or it could be the size of a small bear. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's just impossible
to
tell.
You know, 50 feet long. Who knows?
It's kind of that way with the Montauk Monster, frankly. I mean, it's hard. You can't really tell exactly how big that thing is.
Oh, there's a scale reference on the.
Is there a scale on that one?
There's a fly on it. If you look, there's a horsefly on that thing, so it gives you a sense of scale.
Oh, okay. I didn't see the fly.
Yeah, there's a horsefly on its shoulder just behind its head, and it's almost in perfect profile. But yeah, there's a fly on it, so you can actually use that to guesstimate its size.
I still think a beer can would have worked better.
Oh, yeah. If it had been
a banana would
enough.
Be the best,
banana
actually.
Would good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. And the other thing about these carcasses is they disappeared. Like the Montauk Monster, very famously, it was photographed, but then the carcass was taken away and it just sort of vanished, you know. And nobody knows what happened to it. Same thing with this beast or whatever they found on the shores of Plum Island. Same thing with the dead body that they found and all
Who
that
was
stuff.
Was it taken away by?
Yeah, the authorities, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know.
Animal control?
Maybe, I don't know. And the garbage man? No, just kidding. I assume some guys in suits came and grabbed them and took them away, but I don't know. But the Montauk Monster definitely disappeared, and that's one of the reasons that sort of contributes to the mystique of the monster, is that it vanished the way it did.
Yeah, because it's certainly not getting around on its looks alone.
No,
obviously. You know, somebody took it, and wow, why did they dispose of it? Why is it not in a museum? And also, back to Jesse Ventura, you know, in his episode, which, of course, you're going to need to watch, he notes the security on Plum Island seems to be unnaturally tight for a research facility. I think I mentioned that Department of Homeland Security took over the island in 2002.
You did not, but now you
I
have.
I did not. Okay, now I have. Yeah, obviously, apparently, in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, it was thought, well, Plum Island, you know, if terrorists invaded and, say, set some of that stuff loose, or, you know, grabbed a bunch of it and, just, you know, just hoofed off to the Midwest and infected all of our cattle.
Did you say hoofed off?
Yeah. Hoofed it off to,
I was kind of hoping that it was like, because they were like, listen, it was really great to defend against the French or the Spanish during the Spanish-American War. So this is a good tactical move against terrorists too.
Well, yeah, if they a little terrorist armada sails up there.
This is the first point they're going to attack.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
No,
yeah,
that's
flat
possible
island.
Too.
Yeah, no, it does make way more sense for them to be like, listen, we don't want anybody to get their hands on this stuff.
But Jesse seemed to think that was a little strange that there was that much security surrounding this island.
Jesse thinks a lot of things. He says a lot of things.
Uh huh. Well, yeah, and in fairness to Jesse, I don't know if he believes all of it or not, he seemed to feel that it was just like, you know, and he's of course, as he reminds us many, many times in the show, that he was a former Navy SEAL, and so he knows something about these things, and he thought it was just way too much security.
So, like,
for a humble agricultural research, you know.
Sure. So, like, facility. I couldn't just, like, take my boat out there?
Oh, no.
Okay, if my boat sank, could I, like, swim to the island?
Probably could. They would probably, you know, take you at gunpoint and, you know, like,
that's
you know,
fine.
You know, strip search you and everything like that, and, you know, and probably, like, you know, call the local police and have you taken away. Or then they'd run a background check on you before you were released.
Okay.
But, yeah, they wouldn't kill you. I mean, I don't think, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't, and they probably wouldn't let you drown.
Okay.
But well, yeah, you're not. Good. People are not. I heard one story about some guys that were their boat sprang a leak, and the closest island was Plum Island, and so they went there, and they were being yelled at and waved back by the people on shore, and they actually went ahead and beached on the shore, and the guys just came up and said, "Get that boat off our island now. We don't care if it's leaking or you're sinking or not. Hmm. Get it out. Get it gone now." So they left, and apparently another boat was passing by and gave them a tow back to shore, so they didn't drown.
That's nice.
But apparently they're pretty hardcore about not letting people on the island.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are people that work there. There's a ferry that goes out there every day, takes all the workers out there, and there's all sorts of security in terms of guns, but in terms of disease spreading and
biosecurity.
Yeah, people. Of course, you know, you have to show your ID and all that stuff, you know, and
but it makes sense.
And,
I mean,
well, yeah, and then you gotta, like, you know, go into a room and change out of your street clothes and into lab clothes and stuff, and then when you're done at the end of the day, you have to shower twice.
But I feel like that's standard for most research facilities like this.
We would think it would be, yeah. So I think you have to take a disinfecting shower, and then you go off and take another shower, you know. So it's like, it's serious, yeah.
Devin's makes a great point. This is not unique to Plum Island.
Well,
this,
and no, if it no. is, then I would like to talk to somebody, because I'd like for it to be standard everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, like, if this is overkill, like, we need more overkill places.
Yeah, they're actually not even, like, the highest level of biosecurity that there is.
They're level
great.
Three. They're level three. I think it goes up to 5.
I thought it was 4, but I could be wrong. But
that's fine. Either way, I mean,
I think it's their 3. The Kansas site is going to be a level 4, and I thought there was a level 5, but it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we only know there's a level 4. There's probably a level 5, level 6. We don't
probably
know
a level MI7.
Uh-huh. Probably.
Yeah. I'm just going to go on the record and say I would like every kind of bio research facility to have, like, this should be the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
If you're researching something that can infect things, this should be the minimum.
There's some poor researcher somewhere who works on, you know, making better, plumper, tastier strawberries. And they're like, damn you, Devin. I have to take disinfecting showers now.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be funny. Yeah.
I don't want you to accidentally infect my normal strawberries. I like them little, thank you.
No, that would be funny. Yeah, some government.
Small and
dry.
Tasteless.
Yeah, some government
official.
Because they
forget to water them all summer.
But yeah, I mean, it would be funny if Devin's words were the genesis for a whole new crash program in the government to clamp down on everything. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting the residuals from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get a lot of hate mail.
That'd be the residuals.
It's the government. Yeah. They'd probably be like, here's $1 million a year.
Just for your suggestion.
Just for your idea.
Yeah, I know.
That's how they treat suggestions, right? The U.S. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's
sorry,
exactly
we've gone
goes.
Off. Okay, so.
Oh, yeah. Where are we? Oh, yeah. Back to the tight security on Plum Island. By the way, if you're an animal, like, you know, like if you do have to swim ashore, be sure you don't look like a deer or anything like that, because they will shoot you.
That makes sense to me, though.
Yeah, I know. It does.
I mean,
it's
sad for the deer, but like.
But yeah, I mean, they don't want it catching any sort of, you know,
hoof and mouth disease
hoof and mouth
then
or anything
it
else
back.
And taking it back to the shore. And so any critter like that on the island gets shot. But birds apparently do not get shot, but they shoot mammals, because apparently, I guess, hoof and mouth is a, or I should say foot and mouth, is a mammalian disease. I don't think it affects birds.
No, it doesn't make the jump to avian.
Yeah. And so, so they're not that worried about birds. In fact,
they also don't store animals outside. They used to in the beginning, but animals now, I was actually really kind of impressed with their protocols, because the entire building is negatively pressured.
Yeah.
So that if a wind, like, you know, if there's a crack in a window, it's going to pull air from the outside rather than push it out.
Yeah.
And when you get into the actual infected section where the animals are actually being infected, that's even at an even higher pressure. So all air is pulled into that area so that it doesn't escape.
They have a big fan in the ceiling that blows it all straight out the ceiling.
They have a big ass fan.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully they've got
IKEA.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Well, I'm hoping that you know, they have a really monster sized HEPA filter on there, and not just some crappy thing they got at Home Depot, you know, furnace filter.
Or the one that they got at that uranium plant we talked about.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really good ones, the bags.
Yeah. I'm assuming that they got some heavy duty filtration.
I'm sure
stuff
it costs at least
there.
$10,000.
Oh, more than that. It's the federal government. Come on.
True.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Anyway, so we don't think that it's going to spread diseases or anything like that.
Well, we don't know. I mean, some people say that it has spread disease. Again, there's people who think Lyme disease originated on this island.
Okay.
But back to Jesse. I don't know if you guys made it far enough to see the scene where they try to charter a local boat to take them to the island.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I was.
Yeah, now they get on this boat, and then and Jesse says, "Oh, we want you to take us to Plum Island." And the guy says, "Oh no, I can't take you there." And so they're like, "Oh, really? And you know, why not? Oh, well, I'm supposed to take you there." And so, well, so they went and asked in this marina. They asked some other boat operators if they would, and they were like, "No, won't take you to Plum Island. Sorry."
I'm sorry. This is like, I'm gonna go on a little soapbox here for a second, but this is like far and away my biggest problem with like most conspiracy theories.
Uh-huh.
Is that, you know, this is a reasonable thing. It's a government run facility with like reasonable security for what they're doing there. And reasonably, they've asked all of the boat owners in the marina to not take people there because they're like, it's not a civilian access area, mm-hmm. right?
I think it's more of told than asked, but...
Well, either way, okay. So I think all of those things are reasonable.
Yeah, Jesse didn't see it that way.
Right, and so, like, that's the thing is then when you come in with that conspiracy theory, you're like, well, obviously they're hiding something. It's like, no, they're just... Yeah. They're trying to make it so you don't accidentally infect all of our cows.
Yeah,
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, but the government's not just hiding stuff, but they struck fear into the local populace. I mean, these guys are... afraid to go there. And of course, from their point of view, it's like, well, I have a charter boat operator, and you know, these guys know that I live here, so they know that I know that I'm not supposed to go there, so I can't just like stumble over to the island and say,
yeah,
well,
you have
I
an
had
identification
no idea.
Number on the bow of your boat. Yeah. If they see you buzzing them once a week with a bunch of gawking tourists, they know who you are.
Yeah.
Your identification number is right there. They can very easily find you.
Yeah. So,
I don't think it's very nefarious, but...
Well, it looked nefarious to Jesse, but...
A lot of things seem nefarious to him.
Well, yeah, but it's not just him. I mean, there are people that are really, really worried about what's going on this island. Like, what if some killer plague is released? And there have been some accidents. There was one in 1978. Apparently, Foot and Mouth was released to animals off the island. Don't ask me how. I haven't heard specifics of it. But apparently, there was that. I think that was when they decided to move the animals inside.
I would guess.
I think that was at that point.
That would probably make sense.
I think they recognized. I think that they might have thought that perhaps what happened was it was transmitted by birds. Because you know, even though the birds can't catch that, maybe a bird picks up a tick off of a critter, you know, and it winds up flying back to the mainland or something like that.
Yeah.
So at that point, but they got it in hand apparently, because I could still buy steaks at my local store.
Yeah.
So apparently they got it under control, but the animal pens are now indoors,
which makes sense.
Yeah.
In negatively pressured indoor spaces.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Safety.
But of course, there are other things like ticks that people are thinking might escape from the island. And it's believed, of course, like I said, that Lyme disease originated there. And the U.S. government has experimented with infecting insects, deliberately infecting them with bugs like hoof and mouth and other things. And then so that they could release them over enemy territory and destroy crops or destroy farm animals or whatever. And so the thinking is, well, maybe they were messing around with infecting ticks with Lyme disease, and then they, you know, and then some of those somehow got off the island and onto the mainland. And again, as it's the nearest town, Lyme, Connecticut, winds up being kind of, you know, like ground zero for Lyme disease. Or are they even doing something more sinister, like radical genetic experiments, resulting in like the Montauk Monster, resulting in that body with the elongated fingers and the holes in its head? Yeah.
Mm.
Is that what's going on?
It's I don't know. We'll talk about it in theories, maybe.
Well, some people think that more and worse.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I don't know. Before we move on to theories, any more thoughts? You guys have any other stuff you want to talk about?
I just want to talk about theories.
I think we need to get into theories.
Let's do some theories then. All right, theories. Well, we've got several theories for what's going on the island. So, okay, we'll start with the least likely first. So one theory is they are just researching animal diseases.
AKA they're telling the truth?
Yeah, which is right, right? Seriously, why would you put your super secret facility to research foot and mouth on an island?
So it doesn't infect anything else.
Right, Devin, right. That's a little too pat.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a...
Sorry. Making a little too much sense there.
Yeah. Well, okay, but actually, no, it would make sense. That does make sense, but... They could be up to some other stuff there. So, let's talk about what they could potentially be up to.
I am pro-conspiracy. I think there's a lot of other, weird stuff going on. But I also don't think it's that weird that they would just put their facility researching things that are, super contagious and could totally obliterate agriculture as we know it.
Yeah.
On an island, so it's secretly safe in a way.
Yeah. But, they could still be shoehorning something.
They could be doing a lot of other stuff.
They could be doing all kinds of stuff on it.
Totally.
We don't know. One theory people have wondered about this is whether they're genetically engineering something, maybe conducting genetic experiments, and maybe trying to produce disease-resistant animals.
Well.
And, perhaps some of their experiments, went a little wrong, and they wind up with things like the Montauk Monster or the guy with the long fingers, that kind of thing. Yeah. So that would still be in line with their stated mission, which is protecting agriculture and livestock. You can try to develop vaccines and treatments for foot and mouth and all that stuff, or engineer cows and pigs that are just immune to it.
But I also don't think that's that weird.
No, I mean, I guess that wouldn't be that weird.
They just didn't, I think it was in China, somewhere in Asia, I believe. They just genetically modified pigs. I don't know if you heard about this. I don't think that we'll ever get them in America, but pigs did not have the gene that allowed them to self-warm or something like that. So that's why they amass all that fat. Somebody just spliced in a gene and the pigs...
Used CRISPR or something?
Yeah, I think they did it with a rat gene or something like that so that they can produce their own body heat and it they're leaner, happier pigs that take less resources to create.
Oh, so you're talking, okay. Pigs are warm-bodied animals, so they can generate their own heat. What you're getting at is that they're better at retaining
their body heat. They can't regulate their own heat, whatever is going on. Listen, okay. I'm literally recalling this from an NPR thing I heard 4 weeks ago. I'm just saying that genetically modifying animals to be better is not this secret thing that has to happen in a lab.
Yeah, but it's something we've been doing for
a long time.
Yeah, a long, long time.
But now that we have the tools that we have, it's a literal Pandora's box, because you can say, hey, look, the pigs are leaner, so they're healthier for you to eat. And by the way, it turns out we accidentally eradicated their natural immunity to X. All pigs are wiped out because they all ate raspberries or something.
I know. It's and that's why they don't immediately, introduce this new genetic thing into the general population. I think they let it
for a couple life cycles,
probably not a bad idea.
But also, I don't necessarily think that's, again, it's not this super nefarious, weird, X-Files thing happening.
No, but again, when you're doing research, you got to go down all kinds of avenues and paths, and some of them might be a little weirder than others. I don't know if they're actually doing this. You think it'd be easier just to develop a vaccine for this stuff rather than trying to, engineer a cow that, for example, that can't catch it.
Well, the hard part with engineering a vaccine, though, is that the disease tends to be a moving target. There are certain parts of a disease that are easier to target than others. So there's really specific things, but those things change. It's kind of like, when they do the vaccines for the flu each year, they're hoping to go for some particular aspect of it. They're guessing at what it's going to be present that year, but it changes from year to year because those kind of things move, and there's some more base items of a virus or things or bacteria that you can attack, but they're much harder to target specifically. That's why things like vaccines, sometimes it's just a money-making scheme for companies, because every year they have to make a new one, which is when you get the conspiracy of they're doing it on purpose. They could totally cure it if they wanted to, but why would they throw away all that free money?
Yeah,
wow, that was a tangent. But just
but
it was good. It was very helpful. But
that's a good point. Just like cancer, they could totally cure cancer, but you know they'd rather like have people die. Oh no, I mean they want to make money. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Where was I though? Support for this comes from, of course, horror stories about the Montauk Monster, for example. But that's about it as far as evidence goes for this.
Can we talk about what the Montauk Monster was?
Well, there are people. There are certain people at this, and they're kind of out there, conspiracy theory types, who think that it was a raccoon.
It was a trash panda.
Yeah, a trash panda.
That's what a raccoon is. It's a trash panda.
Yeah, And when you look at it, it does kind of look like one. It's, I think it was missing its jaw, like its upper jaw.
The front of its nose was all worn down. Yeah.
And it was, of course, its hair was gone. But apparently, after you're immersed in seawater for a certain amount of time, your hair does kind of tend to fall out.
If you do some looking around, you can find photos of raccoons that have been submerged in that area, and they look almost identical, except they still have the ringtail. The hair was still on their tail, so it seems pretty clear that it's a raccoon.
Okay.
And based on the scale, using that fly, probably the right size.
Yeah.
But raccoons are terrible, terrible little creatures, and so I'm not upset the fact that they're drowning in the ocean.
Oh, they're cute.
They are cute.
They're until I encounter them in real life.
Yeah.
And then they're awful.
When you find them in your neighborhood, they're never cute and cuddly.
Yeah, they're kind of ornery, yeah.
They're vicious little monsters.
They are kind of nasty, yeah. I mean, they're cute, I have to say.
I like looking at pictures of them.
Yeah, no.
When they're cute, not the, like, gross ones.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are actually a little sweeter natured when they're just cubs. You know, it's when they get older, they get kind of mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like people.
Yeah.
And bears.
Yeah.
Really everything.
Yeah.
Not fish.
Fish?
Fish are never cute.
That's true. Yeah.
I thought you meant they don't get mean. And I was like, they definitely do.
They attack worms and fishing lures and all kinds of stuff. They're nasty. Yeah. But anyway, what do we got? The evidence, the Montauk Monster and some of the other stuff that's washed up on shore that's presented as evidence doesn't look that conclusive to me because, like I say, the monster was probably a raccoon. In fact, almost certainly a raccoon. The other stuff that was unrecognizable, well, that's what happens when you're in the water for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. I told you my story again about my friends who came across a body in the Willamette River and just left because they didn't think it was a body.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just left. Yeah, and so it's definitely...
Or at least
happened.
That's what they told you.
Yeah, really. They probably left the body there, actually. Mm-hmm. That's what they meant when they said left. But and as for that dude that washed up on the beach in 2010, that probably was a mob hit, I'm thinking.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Why not?
No, they don't usually, like, experiment on brains or anything like that. They would just, like, you know, baseball bat to the knees.
Whack them?
Yeah, stick their feet in concrete and just dump them.
Yeah, dump them in the ocean. Okay. Well, okay, so not a mob.
I'm pretty
hit.
Sure they drilled in the back of his head with a gun.
Yeah, that could be.
Also
sure.
possible, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but maybe a mob hit, or maybe Devin says, not a mob hit. But the body did have those weird elongated fingers. But then again, on the other hand, there is this thing called Marfan syndrome, which I don't know if you guys have heard about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it comes with a little bit of deformation in the body, including deformed hands with really weirdly long fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it might have just been some guy with Marfan's.
I didn't ever like see pictures or anything like that.
No, I didn't either.
Of it, so like that's just it's like hearsay to me.
Yeah.
You know, like oh, he had long fingers. Like okay.
Yeah. Well, no, it's entirely possible, like I said, that it was just it could have been some sort of genetic anomaly. I mean,
or he may have been a guy with just long fingers.
That could be it, too. I mean, or Marfan's, like I said, or
it's
some
possible,
other genetic anomaly. I mean,
actually,
genetic anomalies occur naturally.
To a lot of people.
To a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so not necessarily because there was some sort of, you know, Frankenstein experiment going on. Man, but and the other problem I have with this theory, too, especially when it comes to the body being evidence, is the body was found on the beach at Plum Island. So if it was
not on a beach as if escaping from Plum Island.
Yeah. And so it's like if this was the fruit of one of their hideous experiments, then you got to ask why they turned the body over to the local police.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
They wouldn't.
Same with the 1959 footage. I mean, where did this come from? It was because, again, the 1959 footage that's on YouTube, they say that it was found on Plum Island. And so you got to ask, well, okay, so if it was found on Plum Island, these guys go out and say, oh, one of our critters got away again. Good thing we got him before he got off the island.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they take film of him? I mean, they know it's theirs. Why not just, like, you know, bag him up and haul him back to the incinerator?
But we believe the 1959 thing is real.
No.
I had no idea. You know, it doesn't...
I was going to say, because I feel like the video is like not...
Okay, so if anybody has ever used any kind of film animation software, there are preset filters to age things, to give it the lines and the spots. And if you play that thing slow and you watch a spot, you know, you can pick like, just pick a quadrant, you'll start to see the same set of lines appearing over and over. There's no randomness to it, which if it was real old scratched up film,
it would be random.
It would be completely random. So that is somebody's fun thing that they made and antiqued with some kind of, I don't know, iMovie filter or something.
With probably like a dummy from Spirit Halloween. That's
something.
Because you know what it really looks like to me is like a werewolf decoration.
Yeah.
That you would get like at a Halloween store, you know?
Maybe. To me it looks totally like a dog body except for the front legs.
Right, which is what werewolf things look like often.
Werewolf costumes.
Where they're like, you know, the arms of a human going, ooh, but like everything else is the dog.
Mm-hmm. I really wish everybody could have seen you pantomiming
that. It was cute.
It was quite funny.
It was super cute.
Since we got our TV show.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's kind of what it looks like to me is like somebody took their like werewolf dummy out. Like filmed it and then like put a filter on it and was like, it's from 19, especially since it was released after this like other weird Montauk thing. You know, it's kind of, to me, that just seems like
it was actually
a fake internet point grab.
Yeah, it was put on YouTube in, I think, 2016.
Yeah.
Well, and so, the problem is that, you know what, if it was real and it was really somebody out there with a camera checking out this weird thing they had come across, they'd have circled it. Instead, this camera stays in one...
They don't walk around it.
Yeah, this stays in one place and floats back and forth, almost as if it's someone holding out a cell phone camera and just kind of shifting back and forth.
Knowing that, like, the zipper goes up the back of the costume. I mean, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, also, I got to say that, you know, next time you want to put something like that out there, don't say you found it on the beach on Plum Island. Say you found it on the beach, like, you know, just across the shore from Plum Island on Long Island.
Right.
Okay, hello. Okay, so that...
All right, so we kind of butchered that thing.
Yeah, I gotta say, I don't think... I don't give a lot of credence to this whole genetic experimentation kind of thing going on the island. There's just no... Like I said, as far as the human body, it was a mob hit. You know, somebody got shot in the head.
No. You
know? Okay, sorry. Okay, in deference to Devin, it was an accident.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a gun.
Okay, so...
Five times.
Yeah, so no hideous genetic experiments, but maybe they're creating some sort of fast-breeding ticks and mosquitoes, or maybe just not trying to breed the ticks and mosquitoes, but just trying to come up with a breed of tick that would take various diseases without getting infected and dying themselves, because that's the whole thing about those. You got to make sure the bug itself is just going to carry it, and not die from the disease itself.
Yeah.
And so maybe they were messing with that stuff. Some of those ticks or bugs got out, and next thing you know, we got Lyme disease, West Nile disease, et cetera. So maybe it didn't actually originate there, but it just got another possibility is it just got a foothold in the population because there were more ticks to spread it around.
All right, so let's run through this, because there's some serious flaws in this.
Well, there are.
Yeah.
What? That sounds wrong.
And there is actually a theory that's out there, and you know, and on apparently reputable pages, that we have a bigger tick problem today in the U.S. because of government experiments in the 1950s and 60s. In other words, they were doing all this experimenting, they were a little careless, and now we've got more ticks in the U.S., and they're, guess what, unfortunately, faster breeding ticks. And the government, and this is not entirely out of speculation, because the government did do research on all this stuff.
Ticks as a weapon.
Yeah, and obviously creating a faster breeding tick, for example, does make sense if you want to drop a bunch of ticks behind enemy lines, and you know the faster they breed, the better it is as a weapon. You just want to make damn sure they don't get out of your lab and into your own country.
Yeah.
You're kind of screwing
yourself
there.
By, like, maybe putting your lab on an island.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
So it's harder for them to get places.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, you know, once you've created these fast-breeding ticks, you know, you infect them with whatever diseases you want to spread, and there you go. Again, it's not too far out there. Actually, quite a few governments have done research along these lines. And like we talked about earlier, if you can destroy the enemy's food supply, yeah, great idea.
Do it.
In wartime, anyway.
Especially if, like, you can do it with ticks or something that might also, like, get on humans and make them miserable. Like, if you've got your troops are also infected with ticks or something like that. Like, that extra miserable. Not only are you not eating well, but also you're somehow infested with this thing. And, I've never had a tick,
but, you know, I kind of suspect I wouldn't like it if I got
a
tick.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I know a few people that had ticks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got rid of them. But at least I hope they did. But apparently, from everything all my research indicates is the research that was done on ticks and infecting these bugs and stuff like that was all done at Fort Detrick, Maryland.
So not Plum Island.
Apparently not. I found no evidence that it was done on Plum Island.
That's just what they want you to think.
Yeah.
So.
That's a good point, too.
Mm-hmm.
Fort Detrick is kind of the place. It's a much bigger place than Plum Island. A lot more going on there. I mean, a lot of people working there and working on stuff like this, you know, biowarfare kind of stuff. And Fort Detrick, it's possible some ticks escaped. I think maybe the internet certainly seems to have a lot of fleas and ticks on it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So maybe that's where they all came from. And now, if you think about it, if they were, it's possible that maybe some ticks got into the facility on the backs of some cattle.
Oh, coming on to Plum Island?
Yeah, they came onto the island. Somehow they came on. I don't know how thoroughly they were checked for that kind of stuff. And once they're on the island and some lab tech goes by, they hop onto the lab tech, hop off in the lab into a petri dish, swim around a little bit, get infected with this, that, like Lyme disease or whatever, hop onto another human, and then out the door.
And make it through the two decontamination showers and change of clothes?
Well, that would be the tricky part, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But it's possible.
But again, you know, I don't know how, again, Lyme disease, I think, they think it's been around since about the mid-70s. So back when they were all little,
it's been around longer than that.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's a lot of diseases. Like HIV is one of those ones where they were pretty sure it was actually here in America at a certain point, like in the early 80s, late 70s. And now they're suddenly realizing, we've identified some cases that were earlier than that. So apparently it was around. So,
I mean, we just get better at diagnosing things. We used to be like, you have hysteria, ma'am.
You have wasting disease.
You know, or whatever. We got to let all your blood out of your body because it's infected. Like, none of those were things.
Yeah.
But we thought them for a long time. And now it's like we have this higher instance of, you know, anxiety. But like, maybe we just got good at saying it's anxiety, not hysteria.
I mean, Lyme disease has been around for a long time, though. I mean, what is it? It's 200,000 to 300,000 cases of it are identified or diagnosed a year.
More than 200,000 cases in the U.S. per year.
Okay, now that's because we have a very specific set of criteria to identify it with, and very good tests to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
it actually
is hard to identify.
It's got some very distinct things, like the ring around the tick bite is a giant indicator, the bullseye around the bite.
Yeah.
But there's stuff out there from historical writings from the late 17 and the mid 1800s of people coming to the east coast of the United States and being like, dude, this place is lousy with ticks. They are literally hanging off of the trees to drop on you, and everybody's getting bit. And then it's doctors who are treating people reporting symptoms that are pretty much without having, you know, to the degree that we can diagnose things, but it's all visual diagnosis. It's totally, totally Lyme disease.
The first diagnosed case was 1764 in Scotland.
Yeah.
Right,
like, that's so crazy. Way longer ago than we thought. You know?
Lyme disease is not a new thing. That's what's just so, I roll my eyes at this because, It's been around for a long, long time.
Well, I mean, but the theory is, well, they didn't necessarily create the disease from scratch itself, but that they caused the outbreak in Lyme, Connecticut, and it by infecting ticks, deliberately infecting ticks, and then just letting them escape.
Sure, so, maybe.
Again, I don't find that totally persuasive because, one of the problems I have with this theory is that, well, maybe they were that careless and they let a few ticks go, but... The other thing is as a biowarfare agent, Lyme disease is just not it's one that I would pick.
Bad.
No, it kind of sucks as a biowarfare agent.
Yeah.
Because, it's going to infect your soldiers, and then, a couple of years down the line, they're going to get aches and pains in their joints and, and it's stuff like that.
Very, very few people have immediate and debilitating reactions when they contract Lyme disease.
Yeah, exactly. So, by the time it finally kicks in and affects the enemy soldiers, well, maybe the war's already over.
Yeah.
it would be
more effective to investigate how to, apply athlete's foot to your enemy. Because that's going to take hold faster than Lyme disease.
Yeah, that one was easy. You just make them build trenches and then have it rain a lot.
Yeah, that works. Yeah,
they figured that one out a long time ago.
Yeah, but that was totally unintentional.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so much for Lyme disease, I guess.
Okay, what do we got next?
I just think that okay. Well, okay. So they didn't originate Lyme disease. The Lyme disease outbreak. Maybe they're still pursuing biowarfare, though, because, even though we've officially given up on biological weapons, there is such a thing as keeping your options open, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So our official policy today is that we will deter biological attack with a nuclear response, which is great. But, what if a future commander-in-chief just doesn't quite have the moxie to drop a nuke or two? What if an enemy launches a bio attack on our troops, but it's not something like massive deadly anthrax, but something like the flu or something like that? Mm-hmm. So to where we know that they bio attacked our troops, but they didn't give something that's totally deadly like anthrax, and that's the problem with the nuclear deterrent, is that, it's an on-off switch kind of thing. It's an either-or. It's like having a sledgehammer when you're dealing with a mosquito or two. And so having some bioweapons laying around for just in case, whether you not have a treaty or not, is not really such a bad idea as a deterrent, if nothing else. Again, research is not entirely prohibited by the Biological Weapons Convention of 1972. You can still do some research.
Well,
so it's not inconceivable that they're looking into this kind of stuff on the island. And again, a covert kind of thing. If it's something you don't really want to advertise, you can hide it inside another program, which is what people, what the government likes to do.
Yeah. I'm also not convinced that doing research into biowarfare necessarily has to be as inoffensive. It seems possible that the U.S. government thinking, maybe somebody's going to attack us with anthrax, could do a bunch of research into, is there any way to... nullify. I'm totally pulling this out of my butt.
I see what you're saying.
No, but is there a way to nullify the reaction to anthrax, or is there some sort of treatment that we can give people for certain different biological attacks? And it's not necessarily prudent, and definitely you probably don't really want to tell your enemies don't worry, we've got a treatment for all these things now. But that would be continuing research into a sort of biowarfare thing that's not necessarily nefarious in nature, but also you probably would want to keep secret.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that would be a thing, right?
Yeah, well,
Am I crazy? Doesn't it seem like you would want to figure out a way to protect your citizens?
Well, no, you do. And you want to
It's a backup plan.
Yeah, it's a backup plan. And you probably want to keep it a little bit secret because if you've identified we found effective treatments for vaccine and Ebola and beriberi and disco music and so you let your enemy know that, and the enemy of course is like, okay, well, we're not going to bother with those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want to keep that a little bit hush hush.
It seems similar to me that carrot campaign when the U.S. was like, oh yeah, we have radar now, right? But they were like, oh, actually our you eat carrots and it makes your eyesight better, and that's what our troops are doing. That's how they're able to find you guys. We don't have this new technology, right? Kind of, you would just, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I just,
that makes sense though. But
also probably, it's the U.S., so I'm not going to put
anything by them.
Yeah, I'm not going to put it past them to be...
Well, you shouldn't put anything past any government.
Yeah.
And that's
or frankly, any human.
And frankly, yeah.
Which is why I'm curious about that chemistry set down in your basement.
You should be worried about more than that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, not just the U.S., but I think any government. It's actually kind of their job to represent their country's interests. So they're not about the touchy-feely stuff. They're about, you know, playing hardball. You know, when it comes to things like national security, that's kind of what they got to do. I mean, that's their job.
But, yeah.
But I think that it... Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, along with this theory, though, with the whole bioweapon theory, people are using this theory as, you know, their rider for the whole thing with West Nile virus.
Mm-hmm.
And the allegations seem to go from... They created West Nile virus to they're spreading West Nile virus in the United States to observe it, which, I mean, again, it's the same thing. It doesn't make sense. West Nile virus was first identified in the late 30s, and there's actually a very obvious infection trail through time of it moving from... I forgot where it was first identified, but
probably in the Nile Valley.
I don't remember exactly where, but it was, you know, you can follow the trail as it goes from one country to the next and makes its way along. So, I mean, this theory, people grab whatever is their current scary bug and seem to say, well, obviously Plum Island was working on that.
Yeah.
But never, I mean, if you just stop and look at the history, it's...
Been around.
It's been around. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah, the whole idea too that you know we're gonna release it in America so they can see what's gonna happen is like, well, why not release it in a foreign country like say Nevada? why America? Just kidding, Nevada. Why not a foreign country? I mean, you know, and then you just say, oh, you got an outbreak of a disease. That's okay. We'll send our best people in there to help out. Mm-hmm. And you could totally observe somewhere else and kill off somebody else's citizens, you know? And so it doesn't make sense to deliberately release it in the U.S. And you know, I don't know how it got infected. You know, mosquitoes got infected with it accidentally. It's not that hard to keep mosquitoes out of your lab. You know, they can't just fly in the door. You can always put fly strips up, I guess. Do mosquitoes? They fly into that, or you got
to
put up those?
They're not attracted to it.
You got to put
it's accidental.
You got to put those little electric things up there that they fly
into. The blue light.
That'll do the trick. My other thing is, if you're gonna have a super secret biowarfare project, I don't think Plum Island is the best choice. Everybody thinks, well, it's an island. It's so isolated and secret. But the thing about islands is they're actually pretty easy to keep an eye on and spy on and stuff like that. There's only one way on and off the island for all the people who work there. That's the ferry.
Right.
Which means it's easy to keep tabs on who's coming and going.
Plus, we know
the Russians or the Chinese.
Yeah,
right?
We already know that the research facility is actually underneath DIA. So
exactly.
Denver International Airport.
Oh, yeah.
The other problem with an island is that they're subject to weather.
Yeah,
and, you know, hurricane. Big storms and hurricanes come through.
Yeah.
Oh, well, look, all of your research just got spread across the eastern seaboard.
Yeah.
Let's see what it does to them.
The
facilities are obviously underground.
Yeah. Obviously.
Half a mile underground.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's how they're getting people to and from the facility without the Russians seeing them, is they have that underground elevator that they're all taking.
You're right, the ferry
is actually a red herring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Yeah, it's just like filled with inflatable dummies. But no, I think a better way to do it is to bury your secret lab inside a really huge military base with a lot of people coming and going, especially people who have degrees in biology and all kinds of fun
Denver
stuff,
International Airport.
No, I'm thinking Fort Detrick, Maryland, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a pretty huge place. And you could totally bury your project inside that a lot easier than you could hide it on an island.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm kind of liking that for the biowarfare. So we're coming up to our last theory, which is the true purpose of Plum Island, I think. Doesn't mean they're not actually doing some animal disease research, but that's not really the reason for their existence. And I think what it is all that's a cover, and I think the actual purpose is containment of the Kennedy family. Yeah.
Plus Disney. Yeah. Walt Disney's there too, right?
Oh, yeah. Is he there too? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah, he's not.
I'm confident he's wherever the kidneys are. Or
the Kennedys. Yeah.
Kidneys?
Kidneys. Yeah. Both, you know.
Yeah. But you know, so you're aware the Kennedys are rich and they like, you've all seen those pictures of JFK and RFK and Teddy and all the whole family sailing on Long Island Sound, right? Yeah, because
they're
rich.
That's where they live.
That's what rich people do. Yeah, exactly. They have mansions out there and they like to sail on the Sound. And naturally, you know, the government's concerned that they might escape the Sound and wreak havoc on the shipping lanes, which would devastate our economies.
It would, yeah.
So that's why they're doing it?
Yeah, so they're actually there to, they're not there to keep something out. They're there to keep something in. Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, okay, there it is, the real purpose of Plum Island. And, again, it doesn't mean they're not, you know, like piggybacking on top of that and doing a little research on top, but it's just the Kennedys, once again. Okay, well, that's about it for my theories. You guys have any theories?
I like the very first one.
Which one's that?
I do
it's
too.
Exactly what it says it
they're
is.
They're just researching animal diseases?
Yeah.
That could be it. That's what they say on their webpage. Yeah. Apparently.
Although, you know, the best thing that I found in researching this entire episode?
Yeah.
Was a comic strip, and I cannot remember who it is. It's a very famous illustrator, always kind of squiggly lined characters, and it's the doctor walking into a patient saying, well, it's obvious that you have hoof and mouth disease, and he's got a horse standing in front of him with its leg in his mouth. Hoof and mouth.
Yeah, I should. Someday I'll tell you all about the amusing cartoons my doctor's got on the wall in his office.
I don't want to know about the proctologist.
I'm sure you will.
Let's keep going.
No, not the proctologist, not him. Okay, well, anyway, that concludes our episode about Plum Island.
We're plum out of stuff to talk about.
Hi, you've been holding on to that for so long.
I know.
It took him a week to think of that one. But you probably have theories of your own. Maybe you work on Plum Island. I don't know. Maybe you listen to our podcast while you're busy moving ticks around from petri dish to petri dish. Mm-hmm. We would love to hear from you guys. So send us an email. Our email is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. So plumbers, we want to listen. We want to hear from you. What else? We have a website. Yeah, one of those cool new website thingies. It's ThinkingSidewaysPodcast.com, surprisingly. And, of course, you want to know where you can download our episodes and listen to them. Well, of course, there's iTunes, where you can subscribe. You can rate us, leave us a review, preferably a good one. Also, if there's other good reviews, go give them upvotes. If there's bad reviews, downvote them. Okay? also, streaming. We're all over the place on streaming. There's a ton of places. What, Stitcher and God knows what else, Google Play.
Yep.
Social media. We are on Facebook, where we have a group and we have a page. So, like the page, join the group. That's where the action is. And you can leave messages there and have conversations. It's lots of fun.
It's a BBS board. It's super awesome.
Yep, it's fun. We're also on Twitter, where we are Thinking Sideways. And we have a subreddit, Thinking Sideways. Any action on the subreddit?
Yep.
Yeah, what?
I don't know.
Okay.
Posts and stuff.
Discussions and people
hanging out. I need to get
out
there and have a look-see. I will. I say that every week, don't I?
You don't know how to use Reddit. It's okay.
No, I do. I use Reddit all the time, actually. I guess
he reads it.
I read it. That's a good point. I don't know all the subtleties about it, but, one of these days you're going to teach me.
Yeah, maybe.
You keep promising, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, okay, fine.
That wasn't the promise. That's not a promise. You're taking that as a promise, Joe. She's not promising.
Maybe.
She's just saying, we'll see.
She's literally staring at my phone while you're just talking to me.
Yeah, sure,
so.
Yeah. She said, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's fine.
Yeah, right. What else? You're probably wondering how you can support us. Well, you can support us in a really stylish way by buying our merchandise. We have shirts. Yeah. Also, mugs, stickers. You can find this. There's actually links on our website. That's thinkingsidewayspodcast.com.
Don't forget the episode list is up
and
there,
also,
too.
Oh, yeah, there's an episode list. Yeah, click on that on the right, and it gives you the complete episode list, so you don't have to go through the main page, page after page after page after page, to find the episode you're looking for. A lot faster way to go. Well, that's about it, then. Again, plumbers, send us an email. We want to hear from you.
But not the pipe kind.
No, not the pipe kind. We're talking about the deadly disease kind.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you guys. Okay, so until next week, I guess it's au revoir.
Bye. Guys, I don't have anything. I'm sorry.
Oh, my feed bag's empty, so I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, okay.
Bye.
Of course it
was. Moo.
Ugh.